Shall I wait for Arthur? We have a lot going on. I know. Good morning, my sisters and brothers, saints and sinners, children of God. Now, I know most of you, many of you, probably most of you are familiar with the story of the birth of Jesus. And if we had had, if we were doing a Christmas pageant, or if there had been a Christmas pageant, or if you've ever been to a Christmas pageant, you are familiar with the inevitably longer and more detailed birth narrative that originates from the Gospel of Luke. And in that, we see Mary, and we hear from the angel who speaks to Mary, and Mary being this devoted pregnant mother, and Mary being the one that all little girls want to play at the Christmas pageant. That's the big role. But Joseph, nobody really cares to be Joseph. He doesn't really get much say. He doesn't have that many words in the Christmas pageant and seems to be relegated to a side role. But when you read the narrative from Matthew, particularly the verses that we read today, we don't really talk that much about Mary except in a separate person. We're focusing on the drama that surrounds Joseph and the angst that this man must have been going through. And yet, what was Joseph to do with the situation that he'd been given? Now, when we say that Joseph was engaged to Mary, it's not so much like we understand engagement. Joseph didn't walk up to Mary, get down on one knee, pull a ring out of his pocket, and say, "Mary, would you like to be my loving wife?" No, marriage was a little bit more complicated in those days, or maybe simpler depending on your perspective. But first comes the betrothal, which is really a marriage contract. It's basically arranged by the parents of the bride and the groom. And there's probably a dowry involved. The bride's family pays the groom's family to take this woman off of their hands, which can get expensive if you have a lot of daughters. And then the engagement period usually lasts about a year, at the end of which this ceremony is supposed to take place. This couple, hopefully, in that time has an opportunity to learn something about each other. So they're not going into this marriage completely blind. But as we know from stories, that doesn't always happen either. Sometimes, I've heard some stories where the first time the bride sees her groom's face is on their wedding day. But this wasn't the case with Mary and Joseph. They at least had gotten to know or at least met one another while they were engaged. And so she shows up one day to tell her husband-to-be, "I'm pregnant." And he may or may not believe the story of that she tells him about how she got pregnant. I find that, you know, it's a little bit far-fetched. But whether or not he believes it, he still has to figure out what the right thing to do is. And the right thing to do in his time when he lived was to dismiss her quietly. Now, he doesn't want to publicly humiliate her. He doesn't want to put her through what we would think of as the standard protocol in those days. When a young woman who is to be married gets pregnant by a man who is not the father. And so Matthew doesn't really dig deeply into what the repercussions of that would be. He assumes that his reader already knows it, but we who are living 2,000 years later might not quite get the full impact. But what would be certain is the first thing that would happen would be Mary would be sent to live with her own family, and who knows how they would have reacted to her. But Matthew does take pains to write his gospel from the Jewish point of view. And the fact that we're reading this from Joseph's perspective is somewhat compelling. Joseph, who has decided to do the best thing that he can possibly do under the circumstances and to quietly put Mary away, gets visited by an angel who says, "Don't do that. Instead, take this child as yours and name the child Jesus." And so we have this birth that takes place in a manger, and the rest is, as we say, history. But looking at that, we notice that really all the power here does belong to Joseph. All the power here belongs to the men in society. And no matter how kind or faithful or how good a man he was, and Joseph was a righteous man, the Gospels tell us that, it's evident that it is his decision to take Mary and make her his wife instead of quietly setting her aside. Joseph's decided to do this, which he could have done. He could have loudly set her aside, shaming her in public, which was acceptable. And so what would have befallen Mary had he set her aside? What befell many women in those days, through no fault of their own, found themselves in dire straits. Her family probably may have taken her back or might not have. There would have been some kind of public shaming. In the best of circumstances, the woman would be left with no one to care for her or her child. And in the worst, be sold into prostitution or maybe stoned to death. And so was the power or the lack of power in those days. And we find it all through our Christmas saints. Because this dynamic takes place over and over again in these ancient times. Saint Nicholas, who becomes in our wondrous common culture, Santa Claus. One of the most notable legends that we hear about Saint Nick is that he helped a poor man who had three daughters. This poor man's daughters, he could not afford dowries for his daughters. And so, without skills, and not many women had skills, because why train a woman? Because, you know, they were meant to be wives. That meant that they would be sold into prostitution. And so St. Nicholas took three purses of coin and filled them with coins and threw them through the poor man's window in order that the daughters find suitable husbands. And let's take a look at Santa Lucia, who we're going to be thinking about after worship in a procession. Now, one of my colleagues on Facebook had an insight this week in that Santa Lucia played a similar role in evangelizing pagan Scandinavians in the same way that the Virgin of Guadalupe did in Mexico, which is, I haven't really ever thought of it like that, and it might be interesting to take that. This is because in the Middle Ages, the people in this one part of Sweden were suffering from a famine, and all of a sudden, I mean, they were literally dying of hunger. And all of a sudden, Santa Lucia appears in the sky, and then this boat appears on the sea filled with food. And as soon as the boat lands, the food gets distributed, the people are saved, and nobody knows where the boat came from, and the boat disappears just as quickly as it unloads. What a wonderful, wonderful legend. And that's why we hear that Santa Lucia is so big in Sweden. This happened on the longest night of the year, which in those days, before our current calendar, was December 13th. Which is why we celebrate Santa Lucia on December 13th, or on the Sunday before or the Sunday following. But Santa Lucia was not from Sweden. And her life was a different story than it was as this famous, as we in the Lutheran Church commonly see, as this notable Swedish blonde, often blonde girl. We're trying to get away from that. But the life of Santa Lucia was different. She was born and raised in Sicily, in what is modern-day Italy. And it was a time in the 4th century, about the same time that St. Nicholas was alive, that Santa Lucia was alive. And it was a time of persecution against Christians, and her widowed mother, who had no money to pay a dowry for her virgin daughter. Or she had money, but her daughter was to be married. Santa Lucia had taken a vow of celibacy. And instead she gave her dowry to the poor and then became subject to the wrath of the Roman authorities that convicted her of being a Christian. Well, in those days, it was against the law. And her sentence was to be sold into prostitution, a brothel, much like the fate of so many other women from poor families and those who had no opportunities. And only through this series of miracles did she escape that fate. And after subjecting her to other tortures, and if you read the stories of the earliest saints, you find all of these gruesome details about how they endured all of the worst kind of things to happen to people. She never denied Christ. She remained a virgin, and then she was a martyr. And so the legend of Santa Lucia began. Now, today, most women have a lot more opportunities than they did in those days. But we're not yet at a place where everybody has full opportunities. We still, even in the Western, in the United States, we still have serious discrepancies between the availability of opportunities for men and women. And in many cultures, women continue to be subject to the similar restrictions. So just because it doesn't happen here in Berkeley, or maybe it does. Into the 2010s, there is still the slave trade. There is still women being taken into prostitution against their will. There's still child marriage that goes on. And these are real issues around the world, and in some places in the United States it happens. And these are some things that we, as Christians, need to remember. That we have an obligation to stand up to these tragedies, that to stand against these things, to speak out. But the good news, my sisters and brothers, is that this baby whom Mary was carrying, who was to be born, was God himself. This baby who Joseph was told to take as his own, so that Jesus may claim Joseph's descendants from David, was sent to us to be free, to free us from captivity, not only from the bondage of sin, but from captivity from those sources, those powers that would enslave us. The abuse that humankind can inflict. In God, our scriptures say there is no man or woman. I go take that and say, in God there is no gender. We are all beloved by our Creator who frees us from the bondage of sin. And as King, Christ rules over us, over these powers and principalities. Christ rules, reminding us that even as injustice happens on earth, in the kingdom, we are each of us served by Christ's love, and we are mastered by Christ's goodness. Women and men, all of us, And that knowing that in God's sacred vision of heaven, all of us receive God's mercy. All debts are forgiven. And that all fates are righteous and just. Amen.